Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Later in the show, Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau brings us a guest and an update on future events that you can plan for and attend. There's so much going on here in Story County and Ames. Take last weekend, for example. Presidential campaigns are going full throttle in their last bid to rally caucus goers to their sides before the February 1st caucus next Monday night. Saturday saw visits to campus by Florida Senator Marco Rubio and to the Hillary Clinton campaign office by Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood. Today, it's Bernie at C.Y. Stevens. Doors open at 11. Meanwhile, the Practical Farmers of Iowa held their annual meeting this weekend to share the best in on-farm research with its members. Their keynote speaker, John Kemp, who at age 28 might best be described as the Amish rock star of agronomy. I'll have audio in a moment. This year marked PFI's 30th birthday and a change in leadership that was announced at Friday's business meeting. Teresa Opheim, the director of PFI for the last 10 or so years, is moving with her husband to Minnesota, and the organization's longtime operations director, Sally Worley, is taking the helm. I talked with PFI board president-elect Mark Peterson, a farmer from Stanton, Iowa, about the new director.
Sally is a very hardworking individual. Of course, she's always been a very hard worker, very conscientious, and definitely a PFI person at heart, so excited to see her able to move on up the ladder.
PFI has been growing very rapidly in the last decade or so, and Teresa Opheim presided over that growth. Can you say a few words about Teresa?
Yes, I can. I actually joined Practical Farmers about 10 years ago. I didn't realize at the time, it was probably about the time that she started. For several years, personally, I didn't do a lot with my membership, and finally, 5 years ago or so, decided to go to the annual conference and met Teresa and some of the other staff members and volunteered to help a little bit and kind of extended one finger, and she grabbed me around the wrist, and I guess the rest is history. But Teresa is a very engaging person and very good at cultivating folks to continue to volunteer.
Because this is a farmer-led organization.
And she's always been very serious about that. The farmers are in the forefront of the organization.
Board President-elect Mark Peterson was also involved in the Farmland Owner Award. Every year, PFI honors the non-operator landlords who use their land to advance stewardship and help get the next generation started on the land. A little more than 10 years ago, back in 2003 or 4, Dale Nimrod of Decorah, Iowa, and his siblings decided they wanted to sell their family farm in Stanton, Iowa, located in the southwest corner of the state. Instead of looking for the highest bidder, they sought to find, as the new owner, a farmer who was most likely to stay rooted in the community. They found Mark Peterson, who had been farming in the area his whole adult life, renting cropland from other landowners and never thinking he could afford land of his own.
The Nimrod family came along, and while it wasn't a gift by any means, and they'll be the first to tell you that, they worked very hard with us to help determine what the farm would sustain, what its economic value was. And as Dale Nimrod will say, they did add some to that price, but it was a figure that we could work with, and they were willing to work with us on terms so that we were able to purchase the farm. It's quite a story. The Nimrod heirs, their father in, I believe, 1943, he purchased the farm in late 43, I believe. They purchased it late in the year, and in December he was diagnosed with a brain tumor and spent a long time in the hospital. On the 1st of March, the family was moved from their rented farm to their newly purchased farm by the neighbors and friends from around the area. Then in, I believe it was May of that same year, Mr. Nimrod Sr. passed away. He never was able to farm the farm that he had bought. The community helped to raise the family, and they felt that they wanted to do something to give back to the community, and Dale Nimrod was kind of the lightning rod on it. And his idea was, by selling the farm to somebody that would treat it as a family farm, he felt that that would be a good way to help to sustain the community of Stanton.
And you're not geriatric, but you do have gray hair. Is there another generation coming up?
Actually, there's two generations, and that was part of what they identified. While it isn't necessarily certain that any of our offspring will take over the farm, we have someone successfully raised five boys, so we do have several potential heirs, and we do have a couple of grandchildren now as well. And so far, everybody's fairly close in the area. One son's up at Storm Lake, and one's in Omaha, and three are right in kind of the local area, and our grandchildren are as well. So there is the potential for it to continue through the generations.
Well, that's a great story. And how are you farming that land? Are you using some of the principles of sustainable farming that you get from PFI conferences?
It's interesting how it worked out. One of the first things that I did when this farm was transferred to us, I felt an intense desire to maintain a good level of stewardship on the farm, and felt that I wanted to do some studying on that to see if there were things that I could do better to be a good steward of what had been entrusted to us. And long story short, ended up joining Practical Farmers. So it's kind of funny. Vance Nimrod yesterday, one of the other heirs, said, "We're here because of you." And I said, "No, I'm here because of you." Because honestly, if it hadn't been for their farm, I don't think the chances of me discovering Practical Farmers would have been a lot smaller. So it's kind of funny how the whole circle goes around.
That was Mark Peterson, the board president-elect of Practical Farmers of Iowa, who more than 10 years ago was the beneficiary of the decisions of Dale Nimrod and his siblings, who sold their farm to him at below market price in order to ensure that it remained a family farm. The Nimrods received the Farmland Owner Award from Practical Farmers of Iowa, which had its conference this past weekend. And those are the kinds of stories you often hear at PFI, the legacy of Dick Thompson, PFI's late founder, who always encouraged the better angels of our nature when it came to farming and farm life. Well, this year's PFI conference featured as its keynote speaker John Kempf, whom I described earlier as the Amish rock star of agronomy. In fact, it turns out the major investor in his rapidly growing consulting business was also involved in Madonna's project in Malawi. But back to agronomy. John Kempf was raised on a fruit and vegetable farm in the snow belt of northern Iowa and was in his early teens when he witnessed a complete ruination of their crops by pests. Meanwhile, the directly adjacent land, which they had just started renting, produced healthy fruits using the exact same practices. He deduced that the difference in the plant's immunities lie in the soil health and the history of fumigation that was on his family's land. With this hypothesis and no more than an eighth grade education, he dove into research mode and even traveled to Ames to consult with agronomist Jerry Hatfield of the USDA Agricultural Research Station. Dr. Hatfield directed him to a wealth of published scientific research on plant systems and plant stress and became one of several mentors John Kempf credits for his development. Kempf quickly turned his family farm around and, spurred by his successes, developed a thriving consulting business sought after by big growers of horticultural crops such as blueberries. Kempf sees this wealth of data on plant biochemistry that he tapped into as being largely ignored by the agricultural establishment, which has been fixated on the plant genome and yields at the expense of plant health.
In reviewing all of the experiences, all the observations, and the things that I learned in the research that I was doing, I have become convinced that over the course of the last 7 decades of how we manage our cropping systems, we have become incredibly accurate at hitting the bullseye of the wrong target. When we look at genetics and epigenetics, there has been a tremendous focus within the agricultural industry, within crop production, genetic engineering, biotechnology, of trying to change the genetics to improve disease resistance, to improve yields, to improve pest resistance. The reality is that we do not have a genetics problem in agriculture. We do not have a genetics problem. We have a nutrition problem. Environment determines genetic expression. And when we work with nutrition, we have the genetics that we need to produce much more than what we are currently producing. Well, let's use corn as an example. When I ask corn breeders what the inherent genetic potential is of a corn plant, of a corn crop, they tell us that all the corn genetics available on the marketplace today have the inherent genetic potential to produce a minimum of 1,100 bushels of corn per acre. We consistently harvest only a very small fraction of that. What happens is from the moment that corn seed is deposited into the soil, the moment it is planted, it is going to be exposed to different stress factors. Perhaps the farmer was in a hurry and planted too early. The soil is still cool and wet. It germinates slowly, doesn't grow very vigorously right from the beginning. Perhaps fertilizer was not placed properly and it burns some of the root system. 2 weeks after the corn has been planted, we get a very cold, wet period where the corn just sits dormant for 3 weeks. All of those various stress influences reduce that plant's yield potential. So we start with 1,100 bushel per acre, and now when we have the seed planted into cold, wet conditions, you've reduced that 1,100 down to 900 bushels per acre. When you have improper fertilizer placement, you've reduced it down to 700 bushels per acre. When you have the cold, wet stress period, you've reduced it down to 600 bushels per acre. Whatever it is, I'm making up the numbers, and I'm making up the scenario. But the reality is that what happens is that you gradually lose that plant's inherent genetic potential throughout the entire growing season, every time that plant is exposed to stress, until the point at which you're finally harvesting that crop, you're harvesting only a very small fraction of what you originally started with.
And that was John Kempf. Those who tune in to agricultural discussions here on KHOI and elsewhere in the community know that soil organic matter has become an increasing focus of effort and discussion among progressive farmers in the region. In this regard, folks have talked about cover crops and minimizing tillage. Intensive rotational grazing is also known to increase soil organic matter. However, in this context, John Kempf had a rather mind-blowing message to deliver. Some might call it suspect.
It is commonly believed that it takes many years to build soil organic matter, that at the optimum, we can build soil organic matter at a rate of 0.1% per year. However, one of the things that we learned through an interesting experience is that the fastest way to build soil organic matter is to grow extraordinarily healthy crops. So in usual, normal crop production today, plants do not have optimum photosynthesis, and they don't have the sugar production that they could potentially be achieving. And because of that limited sugar production, the majority of their photosynthates, the majority of their sugars are above the soil profile. This is particularly true for all the annual crops, such as corn and soybeans. So you have the majority of the sugar production in crop biomass and in fruit above the soil surface. When those plants become extraordinarily healthy, and you have a much higher plateau of sugar production, that ratio changes. And now 50 to 60% of the total sugar production actually goes down below the soil surface into the root system and is sent out through the root system as root exudates. We first observed this on a strawberry crop in California. And California soils are essentially sand. The California strawberry fields in Iowa, you would not consider them soil. Let me just put it that way. You wouldn't think of them as soil. They are sandy, and in spite of being sandy, they're incredibly compacted. Remember, these are soils that have been fumigated every 18 months or sometimes every 12 months for the last 3 to 4 decades. They are dead. They are as dead as soil can possibly be. So when they are done tilling these fields in preparation for planting, some of these fields literally look like a field of marbles. The soil has been cut up into small round chunks, but it's still as solid and as hard as it was at the beginning. So on one of the first strawberry farms that we started working with in Southern California, we planted strawberries into soil that looked like that. And 12 months later, when that strawberry crop was finished and they removed the crop and removed the plastic mulch, that soil smelled like really healthy soil. There was a very active microbial community and the soil was soft. In fact, the farmer said that I have never seen soil like this in my entire farming history, where he had been working in California production. So and it took us some time. We really tried to understand what was happening, what was going on. But when you look at total crop biomass, let's take a corn crop, for example. It is possible to build soil organic matter faster by growing corn than by growing any other crop. This is true because of corn's very efficient photosynthesis. So when you have a corn plant that is transmitting 50 to 60% of its total sugar production into the root system or out through the root system as root exudates, think about the total sugar production that that represents, the amount of sugar that that represents. If you have a corn crop that represents 30 tons per acre of biomass, that means you also have that equivalent of 30 tons of sugar production out in the soil profile. Well, guess what? You cannot economically put on enough compost to match that. You cannot economically put on enough molasses as a biostimulant to match that. There is nothing that you can do to build soil organic matter as rapidly and as efficiently as growing extraordinarily healthy plants.
And that was John Kempf, a keynote speaker at the Practical Farmers of Iowa conference this past weekend. So how does Mr. Kempf help farmers grow healthy crops? First, he generally encourages them to cut out their conventional inputs, such as pesticides, as his family did on their farm. Then he deduces from the behavior of the plant and its pests which micronutrient is deficient or in excess. Then remedies the situation with a foliar spray of, say, boron or manganese, which his company sells. According to him, the improved nutrient balance makes the plant healthier and better able to fight the stresses it faces, including diseases and pests. In his talk the following morning, Kempf trotted his listeners through a textbook's worth of soil chemistry science. For instance, he said that the pH of the soil, its acidity or alkalinity, is equaled in importance to by its EH, which is rarely discussed, its oxidation and reduction potential. Many of today's practices, such as tillage and fertilizer application, create an oxidizing environment that make the minerals in the soil less available to plants. The lecture hall was crowded for the keynote address and also for the Saturday morning class, but not everyone at the PFI conference was buying his ideas. George Naylor, a non-GM crop farmer from Greene County who is transitioning part of his land to organic, skipped the Saturday morning class.
I did not believe that John Kempf's presentation was ecological enough. One of the reasons I have doubts is because John Kempf is selling products that, to me, make too big a claims for fixing things without looking at the big ecological picture. See, I think we in the 21st century have been basically spoiled by modern science and technology so that we have ignored our ecological limits. And anytime anybody tells me that somehow we can raise even better crops than we are, I have to say that we are already raising too good of crops, whether it's fruit and vegetables in California and Florida and Arizona and Mexico and Central America or wherever we are around the world. And it's being done outside the context of our society and the natural world. And so just by spraying something on a plant, I'm afraid that is not any answer to any problem, period.
George Naylor recently went to Cuba for an agroecology conference with the Via Campesino International Peasants Movement. Our local talk team interviewed him in late December of 2015. So if you're interested in hearing more of his thoughts on agriculture, follow the link on our homepage under the Archives tab. Well, this reporter had a busy day on Saturday trying to cover the news for our KHOI listeners. I left the PFI conference to go to Hillary headquarters on Kellogg Street, where Cecile Richards, the national president of Planned Parenthood and daughter of Texas powerhouse Ann Richards, was stumping for the former secretary. Here's Cecile Richards.
Well, it's great to be here in Ames. I'm here in my capacity as the president of the Planned Parenthood Action Fund because we made a decision over the last several months with a lot of input and a lot of involvement of folks on the ground to endorse Secretary Clinton for president of the United States. So I was here today in support of her and to rally folks to caucus because I know in about 8 or 9 days, the state of Iowa will be the first state to kind of launch this campaign forward.
Okay, and can you tell me what were the factors that went into the decision that your organization made?
Sure. It's important to recognize, one, that we had unfortunately there was no one on the Republican ticket or running for the Republican nomination that was interested in interviewing with Planned Parenthood or even supportive of any of the issues that we work on. And that's a sad state of affairs. We do have three good champions on the Democratic side. And so we went through a process of doing in-person interviews, looking at their records, and then, again, taking it out across the country. And we do have three good friends. One person really stood shoulders above everyone else in terms of being a champion their entire life on issues that Planned Parenthood works on, and that's Hillary Clinton. And whether it is her early days, and we looked at her early days as a lawyer with the Children's Defense Fund on, you know, violence issues, her championing of getting children covered under the CHIP program, which now covers 8 million young Americans, her years in the Senate where she introduced 8 separate bills to expand access to reproductive health care and women's health care. It's 8 more than anyone else had introduced that's running for presidency. And then, of course, her record as Secretary of State, where she literally put the well-being of women into the equation of thinking about how do we think about foreign policy. And so there are many areas in which she has been not only a good vote and a good statement, but she really has been a champion and a leader. And given the stakes right now for women's healthcare access in America, we need a champion. We need someone who actually can go toe-to-toe with those folks who would put women back in the 1950s.
It's been a pretty hard year for Planned Parenthood, and you personally, you were there before a committee. How have you weathered all of this?
Well, it's interesting. Yes, I think feel like we've really seen what it means to have the power of the state come down against you. And I feel like Congress and the leadership, not all the leaders in Congress, it's important to remember the Republican leadership in Congress has come out for many years to try to defund Planned Parenthood, which really means that women, low-income women and men who rely on us for health care could no longer go to Planned Parenthood for basic preventive care. So it has been a tough year. But I feel like in many ways the congressional hearing was a turning point. I think it exposed the real hostility of leadership in Congress on the Republican side towards women, lack of empathy for low-income women, women of color who face extraordinary odds and obstacles to actually accessing basic health care in America. And we gained more than now, I think, 500,000 new supporters as a result. And it's interesting, most of them are young people. And I really can't go anywhere today without a young person stopping me and saying, I saw what happened in Congress. I support Planned Parenthood. And so I feel in many ways, perhaps they did us a bit of a favor in educating young people who I hope will now be involved in this election about what's at stake, because it's really their future.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Cecile Richards. Great to have you here.
Thanks for what you do. I appreciate you being here today.
So, last week it was Madeleine Albright. This week it's Cecile Richards. Such is the life of an Iowa reporter in January of an election year. Of course, as the clock strikes midnight on February 2, our carriage will turn into a pumpkin and all of the politicians and celebrities will leave us in droves. Someone who won't be leaving us is Kim Weaver, who is the next Democrat to try to dethrone Steve King as the representative of Iowa District 4 in November's general election. She announced her candidacy back in August. She was in Ames at the Clinton rally this Saturday, and I asked her what she had been doing since her announcement.
I have been driving all over the place, going to county events. I put about 10,000 miles on my car, going to various county meetings. I live in the far northwest part of the district that's comprised of 39 counties. So as you can imagine, it's a huge district. I just got a campaign staffer here full time to work with me. And in my free time, I also work a full time job as a long-term care ombudsman. And to even put a little bit more of a challenge in there, I ended up with unexpected back surgery in November. So I had to take a few weeks off for back surgery and recovery, but now I'm back on the road again and really enjoying getting out and talking to people.
Can you explain what a long-term care ombudsman is?
Certainly. I'm an advocate for people in nursing homes, assisted livings, and residential care facilities, and I cover 15 counties. It's a federally mandated program through the Older Americans Act, and we serve as strictly advocates for the residents, not, you know, we're not mediators, but we help to negotiate solutions for residents of nursing homes and tenants of assisted livings and help their families. We also educate facilities and help them improve the quality of care in their facilities.
Washington is a very different place from Sheldon, Iowa. How do you see yourself there? Why do you think you'll be effective there?
I've always known to be a very tenacious person, that when I see a problem or I see somebody that's being taken advantage of, I'm not afraid to stand up. I'm bold about it. I don't care. My favorite saying is, they can't take away my birthday. And when I was first approached about considering a run, I was a little surprised because I'm not a traditional candidate. And I had a few more people come and talk to me, and they said, Kim, you're perfect because you're passionate about standing up for people. And that's true. When I tell people that I'm running, one of the first things usually I get a hug or bless you or something like that. And then they say, oh, you're so brave. It's not about being brave. It really isn't. It's just about being passionate that people should have a voice and people should have a representative that listens to them and represents them, not their own interest. And I'm the right person to do that.
So you'll have an opportunity to introduce yourself to a lot of active Democrats through this caucus process and the district convention.
Most definitely, and I have. I am also a member of our state central committee, so I'm well known in the district. I'm a chair for my county committee, and I joked that I tried to resign, and they wouldn't let me. So I'm still chair for my county and still very active in the actual Democratic Party process. So, you know, I'm definitely out there. I'm one that gets behind the scenes as well as the one that's up at the podium. And I don't know if you read the article in the Des Moines Register. It was last year, December. It was the top 50 Democrats to know, and I was one of them. And when I was called, Jennifer Jacobs said that I was one of the few people that when she called, you know, people to ask who's the go-to person, who are the go-to activists in Iowa, that I was mentioned in all four districts. So I have a strong statewide presence as well as an activist. And now I've gotten from, you know, behind the telephone and behind the desk and up onto in front of the podium.
What one thing that we haven't talked about would you like people to know about yourself?
I'm a regular person. I sometimes sit and think, you know, why me? Why not somebody else? And I think about it. No, I'm exactly the person because I'm somebody who knows the struggles of everybody. I know the struggles of a single mom. I know the struggles of a parent who's had a sick child. I know the struggles of someone who has to go to work every day. I'm also a union member, and I believe that I have a very good in touch with just everyday people. And I think that that's what we need in Washington is somebody who is going there for the people and not for their own recognition. And I've always been the one that's been behind the scenes supporting candidates. Last cycle, I built 6 websites for people running for the Iowa House and Senate, and I've knocked on doors in all 4 districts, and I was a delegate to the national convention in 12. You know, I'm the one they call to get things done. And so now I'm the one they called to get things done in D.C.
Great. Thank you so much, Kim.
It was very nice meeting you, and thank you for your time. This has to be fun.
It is. That was Kim Weaver, the Democrat who will face off against Steve King in November. She also attended the Story County Democrats' Soup Supper in Ames on Saturday evening. When we come back, Allison Walter from Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Get off of my feet today.
Never get to moving round.
Penny sitting upside down. It was an anime.
Just sitting there.
Between the cracks.
Without a care.
It was a
penny sitting upside down.
If I never get out of my house today.
Down the hill to the town.
Never get to move around. If I never get into the water today.
Surely never to drown.
Penny sitting upside down.
When the
upside down, the best thing isn't to be pessimistic. So if you ponder some big question, you're already halfway there. Upside down, the best thing isn't to be pessimistic. So if you ponder some big question, you're already halfway there.
That was Youth Orchestra, a band originally out of Iowa City that moved to Fort Collins several years ago and is still playing together, all seven or eight of them. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. In the studio, we've been joined by Allison Walter of the Ames Visitors and Convention Bureau. Did I get that right?
Convention and Visitors
Bureau. I had a feeling. That's I had okay. A little dyslexia there. Welcome back to the studio, Allison, and Happy
you.
New Year.
Thanks.
Yeah, and you've brought a guest. Would you care to introduce
sure.
her?
Sure. I brought Crystal Davis, and she is our communications manager at the Bureau. And so she's working with some of the things we're going to talk about.
All right, great. So we have one more week in January.
Yes, and then it's February.
Yep.
Yikes. This month has gone quickly.
Oh, not quickly enough.
True. Well, we have a couple of things before we get to some events that we thought we would share. And that is that we have a new website that will be coming out this week, going live this week. And then we're also revamping our site's guide to Ames and Iowa State University. And that new publication will come out in March.
Okay, so CYTES is spelled C-Y.
Right.
T-E-S.
Right.
And is that the little little booklet
the
that
magazine.
Usually comes
yep.
out?
Yep. And it's sort of our membership piece, promotes all the member organizations. But it's a great resource for the community and for visitors of things to do, places to go, places to eat and that kind of thing.
Yeah. How frequently does that come out?
We'll be doing it three times a year, and it sort of goes with the school calendar. So there'll be this one that comes out here in March for the spring and summer, and then we'll do another one in August for the fall semester, and then we'll have another one out the first of the year for kind of that winter spring time frame.
Right. So those who really plan ahead and get their events all scheduled in advance, they're at the advantage because they can get into the site's handbook.
Right. Exactly. Well, we will list their events in our published in our publication. Yes.
Okay. And the revamping is.
The revamping is going great. We decided it needed a little bit of a fresher look, a little more engaging. So the picture on the cover is going to be more dynamic. And we've kind of made it look a little bit more like a magazine. And each magazine's the guide will have three feature stories. So one that's coming up for this spring issue is we're going to do amazing music jams on Main Street. So we'll have a little bit of a focus about all the great things you can do music-wise here on Main Street. Adventurous things to do this summer. So just another way to get you to look at the magazine and find out what there is to do in Ames.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to include our third Thursday
right.
music nights here at KHOI in that article. Tell me then, what about the website? What's
right.
that?
Well, Our new website will be sitesofames.com, again, C-Y-T-E-S, of Ames.com. And you'll kind of see a theme developing here with the play on Cy, the Iowa State mascot. And Sites of Ames will be a great resource for people when they're in the community. It'll have a lot of the similar information on our as is on our visitames.com website. But it'll be real quick and easy navigation to get to those things to do, places to eat, shopping, places to stay. So it's going to be very visitor oriented, and it will. But it'll also be great for community members. If you're looking for something to do, quick and easy resource for the latest. Events that are happening right now.
So you don't have to go find a copy of the Ames Tribune.
Right.
You can just pop onto your website and...
Right. See the next, the things that are happening today as well as on into the future. But it'll be a responsive website. So whether you're looking at it on your desktop or your tablet or your phone, it's responsive, so it still looks great. It won't be really tiny.
Right.
When you're looking at it on a phone, it will respond to the.
And maybe you can even add an event to your personal calendar or something like that.
I'm not sure if we can do that yet.
Oh,
but,
okay.
the new website will be much more visually engaging. And like Allison mentioned, it'll be easier to navigate. And we'll be able to do some fun features, easier to put. Maybe there's a hot deal coming up with a Main Street. There's a dollar days at the end of the month, or a new group just got announced at Season at Stevens or at DG's Tap House, for example. We have the capability to quickly and easily get that on the website, kind of like here's what's coming right now. And we also will be able to feature different ways. Different things for you to do. For example, the one that's up and coming that you'll see first on our website is 13 things to do when it's cold outside. And it'll give you a quick list and where to go if you like snowshoeing, ice fishing.
Yeah, you've got to get a little
chocolate.
More snow, I think.
Yeah. But, just the ease for not only the community but for the visitors on what there is to do here.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds very nice.
And then we'll also, as the year goes on, we're going to do similar revamping of our visitames.com website. So later this spring, you'll see that as well. So.
Okay. Well, that's always been a great resource for our radio station and
yes.
The community calendar. So I'm sure everyone here will appreciate the revamping.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And then we also wanted to share some news with the community about our Ames Community Grant Program.
Oh, yeah.
And at our annual meeting, we announced the recipients of this year's grants. And there was over $80,000 awarded to 30 different events and organizations for events this year. So,
oh, my goodness. Now, did KHOI get any?
KHOI did not this year. So
I don't know if we even applied. We need some kind of, intern to take care of.
There you go. So very excited. We've actually already had one of those events occur, not this past weekend, but a week ago. The Iowa State Madrigal Dinners received some funding. Funded the Octagon's 50th anniversary. So they'll have events throughout the year celebrating their 50th anniversary. The Ames Historical Society is doing an exhibit, Time of Expansion, and they'll have events throughout the year. They receive mm-hmm. some funding. We have three rodeo events that will be happening in Ames this year. The Iowa State Cyclone Stampede Rodeo Club received a grant, and they have their event in the fall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have we had rodeos here before?
You know, with the new Hanson Ag Center, we now have a great facility to do that. So this past year, all three of these events happened, and now I think they're going to become staples in the community. And we're excited to be able to support them with community grants. The Double D Bull Double D Bull Ranch. We'll be doing the bull riding national tour championships here in Ames in February.
Really?
Yes. And also the Tough Enough Miniature Bull Ride will do their national championship in Ames. And they, it's a kids event, so middle school, high school kids that are wanting to get into the rodeo business. And they actually ride miniature bulls and horses. So. Wow.
And their bones repair more quickly.
Exactly, right. We've got Dancing with the mm-hmm. Story County Stars, which is coming up next weekend. The Extreme Bull Ride event is February 20th, so that's another one coming up. YSS is doing their Chili Challenge in February, so that's a great fundraiser for them, and we are supporting that. And also the Ames Home Builders.
Yeah, this is a brand new event that we're excited is coming to Ames through the Ames Home Builders Association. They're going to have their first a home and garden show, and that'll be also out at the Ag Student Learning Center. And so we're really excited to have this new event be not only part of our community grant program, but I think they've been away from the area for a while. They haven't had a show in a long time, and now they're coming back.
They haven't had a good facility to do a home and garden show. And so they're very excited to have the facility now with the Hanson Ag Learning Center to be able to do that.
I'd like to mention a community grant winner with the Ames Public Library. They're going to bring an opera, Cinderella the Opera, to their facility. And this is a cool thing that's through the Des Moines, let me see if I can say it, the Opera Iowa. And so it'll be what a great experience that we can bring this to Ames and for the families, and they'll get to meet the cast afterwards. So just great, great things coming this year.
Now, you said it's at their facility. Are you talking
the library?
Mm-hmm. At the library, yeah. not in the city auditorium.
No. And so it'll be real interactive for the children.
Right.
So,
intimate experience of opera.
Exactly.
Wow.
So
tell me, are these grants, is this a one-year grant cycle? You just folks apply once
right.
a year?
Yep. Every year the Bureau sets aside 5% of the hotel motel tax that we bring in into a separate fund. And then that there's an application process in the fall. Applications are due in October. And then we have a committee of Bureau members that volunteer their time to read all of the applications. I think there were well over 40, 45 applications this year. And there's some criteria that they review them on. And then they make a recommendation to our board of directors on who to fund and how much. They'd love to fund 100% of every application, but that doesn't always happen. So then at our annual meeting in January, we announce the winners, and they have the year to spend that money, and then we'll do it all over again in next October.
Okay.
Well. Yeah. And this is the 10th year of the project, of the program, and we've given away almost $500,000 over those 10 years.
How much is the tax on hotels and motels?
It's 7%.
Okay.
So it's and then of that 7%, of that 7 cents, the Bureau receives 5 of the 7 cents, and then 2 cents goes to the city, and that replaces the local option tax, and then 1 cent is set aside for economic development. And so of our 5 cents, we set aside 5% of that.
I see.
And it's been in that, $50,000 to $75,000 range over the years.
Well, that's a nice, secure source of income.
It is, yes. And for the organizations that want to put on events, and it really adds to the quality of life and the things for residents to do in the community. So yeah. It's a great way to be able to support those organizations.
Absolutely. Everybody's up to something in this county.
That's right. Yes. Yes. So I suppose we ought to talk about some of the events going on in February, huh?
Sure. We touched on a few of them, the rodeo.
Yes. We have get to my spreadsheet here and kind of start at the beginning. One thing that I wanted to mention was Actors is doing their production this month is Moon Over Buffalo. And that will start on the weekend of February 5th, 6th, and then also the weekend of February 11th through the 14th.
And what is that? Is that a play or a musical?
Yes, it's a play. And it sounds like it's a comedy from what I've read about it. Takes place in the 1950s. So they always do great performances, should be fun. And they've got a great new online ticketing system that they used some of their community grant money last year to put that in.
Oh, so, you know, it's a little bit wintry outside, but if you'd like to see some beautiful orchids, the Orchid Fest is going on at Ryman Gardens, and that'll be on Saturday, February 6th and Sunday, February 7th. So I like to say get out of the winter blues and into the tropical greens at the gardens, and you'll want to check that out. Beauty all around to see that great, great festival that they put on.
And it's nice to feel the moisture in that, yes, in that environment because everything is so dry right now.
Right. Yeah, you go into that conservatory and it's nice and humid.
Yes.
We have Home Free that will be performing at Stevens Auditorium on Wednesday, February 10th. And they won NBC's Sing-Off contest, and they made their mark on the music scene by selling more than 200,000 albums already and racking up more than 50 million YouTube views. And they will be at Stevens Auditorium on Wednesday the 10th at 7:30. Sorry, hold on.
That should be a great concert. All the music's by them.
Yes.
A cappella.
Yeah. Celtic Knights coming to Stevens Auditorium, and that is Thursday, February 11th at 7:30. And, of course, all the Celtic music and dancing, singing and dancing.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about Season at Stevens. They always bring such a wide variety of international groups to perform here. Oh, the Ames Town and Gown is having their 27th annual musicale. That'll be on Saturday, February 13th. And they're going to be doing chamber music, song, followed by a food with a sumptuous buffet. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking Valentine's Day, that might be a great option for a loved one to take. So that'll be Saturday at 7 p.m., February 13th.
And they do that at St. John's Episcopal Church each year.
Great date.
Buckwheat Zydeco came for our 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
Sesquicentennial, mm-hmm. Ames 150. And they'll be back. They'll be at the M Shop on Saturday, February 13th, and that show starts at
9 p.m. I think you can do both things.
Yeah, there you go.
Go see Ames Town and Gown and their performance, and then head on over to the M Shop. I think you can do that.
There you go. It'll be quite an evening, won't it?
Dance off some calories.
There you go.
Ragtime is coming to Iowa State Center, Stevens Auditorium, and that will be Thursday the 18th, show at 7:30. And this is a great Tony Award-winning show that is coming to Stevens. Again, a nice variety of things that happen at Stevens Auditorium.
Well, and guess what's happening on Thursday, February 18th? Something that might be familiar. The Third Thursday Cafe, put on by KHOI. And so that'll be at 7 p.m., and you can enjoy an evening of local music performed live. And so do you know anything about that?
I think it's Blind Obsidian, jam band from Boone.
Oh, okay. All right.
So very good.
We might have to clear off the floor a little. Oh,
there you go. All right. So lots of things going on. I mean, as we pulled this spreadsheet up, we had over 100 different things. So check out our website.
Yeah, you're going to have to go straight to the website. Is it up yet, your new one?
The Sites of Ames will be up later this week, so you can check that out hopefully soon. But always, as always, you can go to visitames.com.
Visitames.com, and you'll direct
connect us to Sites of Ames from there.
Yep, exactly.
When you get there. Okay, well, thank you so much, Allison.
Thank
it's always good to see you. Nice to have you back, Crystal.
Thank you.
And we'll be seeing more of you.
I hope so, yeah, thanks.
Okay, great. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out the show with a look at the Practical Farmers of Iowa annual meeting with Board President-elect Mark Peterson and audio from John Kempf, keynote speaker. Greene County farmer George Naylor also provided commentary. Our political content was, which we have to have on every show this January, was delivered by Cecile Richards, a national director of the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, and Kim Weaver, who is going up against incumbent Steve King in the 4th District this November. We then heard from and were joined by Allison Walter and Crystal Davis. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to Ron Carson, our webmaster, for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Nadia Abdel-Azim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Penny by Youth Orchestra, a band now out of Fort Collins, Colorado. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.